Hello, listeners. Get ready for a super interesting chat on today's Ecompulse podcast episode, as I've sat down with Elias Castaneda, VP Marketing and Digital Commerce at APNG Catchmaster, where they are pioneering eco-friendly pest control solutions. We've discussed what's new and hot in e-commerce for 2024 and how online shopping and physical stores are finding new ways to work together. Elias also shared his personal story, which is a wild ride from engineering to finance, and then a bold jump into digital marketing and e-commerce. Elias is a whiz at creating content that really speaks to people and knows how to balance B2B and B2C shoppers. He's got some fascinating take on the impact of COVID on the shopping landscape and the evolving strategies of retail giants like Walmart and Amazon. Elias gives us a peek into his approach to A-B testing and how customer feedback directly shapes product strategies at APNG Catchmaster. His emphasis on personal customer relationship, even in the digital spaces, offer a fresh perspective on customer service and brand loyalty. Additionally, he shares some cool insights into how his love for strategy video games influences his professional mindset. Elias gets personal too, talking about breaking out of the usual finance stereotype and following his true calling in business growth and innovation. In this episode, we explore the latest in e-commerce and get some genuine inspiration from someone who's really changing the game. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Ecompulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Hey Elias, how are you? Welcome.
Hey Eitan, really good, and you?
Doing well. Thank you so much for your time. Elias, you've been in the industry for so many years and I've been looking into your career. It's really, really impressive. So really appreciate the time. So from your perspective, I know you've been doing a lot, which we'll cover during this episode. What is your overall observance, or what do you see in the overall e-commerce market in 2024?
You know, I think it's going to be a very interesting year where things are merging. Between the brick and mortar and the digital channels. So, you know, you see everybody's talking about omnichannel, but yeah. The question is, how is it going to unfold? You know, I've been seeing some trends saying, hey, all transactions are going to become digital at one point. And, you know, the store side, the brick and mortar side is going to be a delivery and some additional experience, but not the transaction point. So, you know, I'm seeing that. But also, I think COVID brought a lot of acceleration into the adoption of e-commerce. And now we are getting a little bit of, you know, reshifting. Stores are taking, a big part of importance in the whole ecosystem. And I remember back in 2020, People, we were all talking about, okay, this, you know, everything is going to become digital. People are going to receive things at home. Stores, I don't know if they have a lot of place. You know, there will be new competition that might be just digital channels. And, you know, now you see a lot of retailers investing in both. So I think that is the critical component that I see this year happening, is that reshift. And where are we going to land? And, you know, I've been seeing, like, for example, Walmart doing really, really good, a really good job. At the beginning, I thought, I don't know if they're going to be able to become a successful technology company and compete with Amazon. And now I'm seeing, okay, they are definitely upping their game. Yes. And that brings the shift of the digital and the physical, right? Now Amazon needs to find a way to absorb that physical space to be competitive with Walmart on the long run. Of course, Amazon is the king right now in the US.
Sure. I mean, Amazon will continue to grow, obviously, retail media, and they have many opportunities, but a lot of new companies are trying to fight them. TikTok, Temu, obviously Walmart, growing quite nicely. Obviously, this is also part of your strategy. I mean, what is your plan specifically for APNG? And maybe you can share some information about what you're doing these days.
Yeah, so, you know, AVNG Catchmaster is the leader in the United States of glue-based non-toxic pest control. So we manufacture glue traps of any kind and, you know, also non-toxic products. Mm-hmm. For, you know, it's a really good, I think, category to be in. You know, personally, I like it a lot. I think we're driving a lot of good things for, you know, for the world, helping people control pests in a way that don't put their pets or kids at risk. Alternatives, you know, have poison or have mechanical features that can, you know, really hurt somebody. So I really like what we are doing here. Our strategy is, you know, right now we're growing really, really fast. High double digit, you know, getting close to the triple digit growth.
Wow.
In our case, we are a family business, a smaller business. We have presence in many retailers, but we're competing with big guys, and you know, the big guys have presence in every single retailer. And in our particular case, e-commerce has been perfect because a lot of the demand that is shifting from the stores to digital, we are catching it, right? We are giving an excellent offering to our consumers, and consumers are switching from the in-store brand to our brand. We have presence in Walmart, but a lot of the other smaller retailers, we are not there, and we are catching a lot of those sales. So our Amazon business is thriving. We are doing a lot of branding, especially in our category. The way that I describe it is, you know, we are the Kleenex of our category. The issue is our consumers don't know it yet. And we need to make sure that we pass this message to the consumers. They need, if you buy a Catchmaster product, you will get our quality, you know, our special formulas that have been designed for 65 years to maximize your catch and make sure that you are able to solve your issue at home or, you know, for bigger consumers at their ranches or for professionals in their business. Now, our strategy also is we're going through all 3P marketplaces. So because we have the top sellers in Amazon, right? We are in the top sellers. We have many products in the top 10 and many products in the top 20, the top sellers of all pest control in Amazon. So now our strategy is we are trying to bring our products into every single other marketplace, Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, mm-hmm. to show the buyers that our products are key drivers of growth, right? So for a brand like us, it's an excellent opportunity to, instead of going and pitching to the buyers, that's still something we're doing, and we are showcasing and demonstrating our products, explaining why we are the best. Now, the other thing we're doing is we're putting our products in their marketplaces. We're showing that our products can become number one sellers and then make it reduce the risk of the buyer of adopting a product like us and make it a very, a very numerical decision, bringing our products in. It's not more a bet and believing in the product. It's, hey, look at our sales compared to our competition online, and now take those numbers and apply it to your store, and this is what you're leaving in the table.
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, there are a lot of interesting topics to discuss around here. First of all, the unique, I would say, growth trajectory that you're trying to achieve during this era, right, where most of the brands are fighting or struggling to maintain a profitable growth. So what do you think is driving this growth right now for you guys?
So we have been working on, you know, I joined the company one year and four months ago. And when I joined, I explained that content is king. Mm-hmm. And we have been working a lot on upping our game in our content. So if you go to our Amazon store, or if you go to our new catchmaster.com website, you're going to see a lot of content describing our products, making sure that consumers understand how to utilize our products and we bring value to them. But also the key thing here is because our type of these type of companies are very science based. If they struggle a little bit to communicate to customers and consumers in a way that is simple. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what the way that we are trying to bring these to consumers is our consumers are not trying to learn a lot about pests. Okay. They are trying to learn the minimum amount to solve their problem. And we need to give them the information in the most concise way and easy to understand. So we can maximize, we try to make our consumers catch masters in the shortest amount of time. So a lot of our content is refreshed, especially visual imagery. It is really high level. And then the other thing we're trying to bring to our consumers is they need to understand, we want them to understand the power of our formulas. When I joined the company, people were saying, hey, our products are the best products in the industry, but they need to be demonstrated. You need to bring the trap. You need to show people the viscosity, the strength, etc. So now I'm trying to capture all these elements of our Catchmaster formula, our Catchmaster glue, and bring in into explain them and make the consumers feel it through digital channels, right? So you're talking like we are talking about like visual examples of the strength of our products. So we are putting our products to the test, carrying dumbbells, carrying heavy objects, also showcasing and having shots of our product, the viscosity, showing how it looks when you are on getting on something on stock to the products. And now we're going the next level that is like, how do we make people even the sound of our glue, right? Like we are trying to bring all these elements to our consumers because we are completely convinced that we are the best in the industry. And now it just needs to be in a couple seconds, consumer needs to understand that if they buy a Catchmaster product, they buy our guarantee.
Yes. And the best way you find to do that is through creation of content, obviously, and that provide probably brand positioning and education. You're primarily doing it through written content, videos.
We're working on all angles. Depending on the brand, we have, for example, a brand called Vector by Catchmaster that is it's light traps that are glue-based, so light traps that are not sapping. And the reason is like these traps are the most safe for kitchens, places where people are preparing food or they need to be sanitary. When you have a bug that goes into a light trap that saps, the bug explodes and all those pieces of the bug go into the environment, right? Okay. So if you're trying to prepare food, that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
So in that particular case, we are doing the whole rebranding. We're creating brand stories. We are doing brand positioning work. We are creating now brand books, logos, brand style guides, etc. And what's happening is that that's taking us, accelerating a lot the speed that we can implement because we're being super, super disciplined on creating all this groundwork for all our brands. Now we are working with agencies and creating content on all those types. So for Vector specifically, video content is very important for usage, right? And highlighting the features of the product. Mm-hmm. So we're creating instructional videos that will explain to our consumers do's and don'ts, how to place traps, tips of placing in. For the glue-based products, we have videos that more showcasing the power of our brand, and then visual content that explains in detail how to use our product. So if you go through our 6 images, you have a pretty good idea how to place our products. Yeah. And then all the written content is designed to really, maximizing SEO, but also for consumers that want to know a little bit more, explaining how to use the products. And the way that we see this is we are obsessed with our consumers, okay? So what we are trying to do is we're trying to say, we know you don't want to know a lot, so we give it to you in levels. We give you the first part. Is this enough? Do you feel is enough for you to catch your pest? Yes? Okay, move on, right? No? Here's a little bit more content. Do you feel is enough? Now, here's a little bit more content. Instead of just having like a whole content placement and say, hey, here's everything, figure it out, we're trying to limit it because we know consumers have no time. They have a lot of other things to do in their life, a lot of other decisions to make, and they don't want to become experts in pest control. They just want to solve their issue as soon as possible and in a cost-effective manner.
Yes, I mean, there are a few strategies that I see that are implemented in terms of how do you gather that information and how do you make decision regarding customer journeys, right? So one strategy is, hey, we get feedbacks from customers and we quickly adapt, right? We change UI UX and we make it like that. But once you get all that knowledge, and this is what I see for more of the mature brands, they come up with the plan. They come up with that strategy of how customer journey should look like and how do you funnel consumers across these type of customer journeys. So how do you do that? I mean, how do you know what customers are looking for? How do you analyze what's the best customer journeys? How do you analyze this type of data?
Yeah. So in this particular company, in APNG specifically, when I joined, we didn't have a lot of consumer data. Okay, so the strategy was, okay, there is a level where we intuitively can elevate our brand and our content and our channel. So we need to follow our intuition and then do a lot of A/B testing. So, there's pieces of content that I wouldn't like to necessarily disclose, but in Amazon, we are doing a lot of A/B testing on small changes on the visuals of our traps, how are they being displayed, etc. And we started with a lot of A/B testing because we have massive traffic. We were testing consistently, you know, different messaging, different visuals. And from there, we were documenting all the things that were being successful. Mm-hmm. Personally, I really like this approach because what I've seen when I've worked in larger companies is you start with so much data and you start making these stories, okay, that you start making these stories and these funnels. And one of the issues that I'm seeing is like, how much of this story are you retrofitting, you know, to your ideas to tell a story? Mm-hmm. And how much is this is real? Like how much of this thing that you are putting in place is real life? Or is you just trying to, you know, be useful in your work and, you know, trying to bring a new approach, a new angle to the equation, right? So that is something that always when I'm in a company, I'm trying to say, hey, am I just trying to tell a story to myself so I can tell it to my boss, or I'm being real and I'm trying to focus on the consumer? Yeah. And I've noticed a lot of times, you know, in general, employees, executives are just building this story to themselves and to the internal part of the organization and much less consumer focus, right?
100%, yes.
So I think A/B testing was critical to start the journey. Then a lot of the base knowledge that we could get from ourselves and then launching an e-commerce website as soon as possible, right? Because that opened channel of communication. My goal was we need to open as many channels of communication. I want to understand the consumer. I want to see them work, interact with our website, right? So we have we launched our website immediately as soon as we could. And then we started, you know, using different tools to track like the funnel on the consumers, what are the consumers clicking on, and then always documenting those learnings into our, you know, documenting those learnings, making sure that we are not just learning and then forgetting about it and making changes. All of this gets documented and opening channels of communication. So now we have a chat where I have a customer representatives talking to consumers. And then always I have that chat open all the time because I'm trying to understand every time a customer complains, I'm trying to understand what's happening. Is it our fault? If it's our fault, how can we make it right? Like this is like, I'm trying to make it as tactical for me to see this, right? To also change my patterns of behavior of when I'm doing things in the company, the things that I'm prioritizing strategically. But that's where we are right now. The next level is going to start doing consumer surveys, and you know, eventually getting more sophisticated in terms of pricing, conjoint analysis, etc. But we have so much information right now, and we are driving so much growth that I feel satisfied with our approach.
Yes. I mean, what I see also that analyzing data is one thing, but having a culture that quickly adapt and being agile to implement changes, like cross-company changes sometimes, to support those changes is also, it's a different thing. So really nice. It's really nice to see that you are quickly implementing, getting information, analyzing them, having this agility in place and quickly adapting to support, you know, new requirements. And we can add another layer of complexity on top of everything that we've discussed is the complexity of you have a B2B strategy and you have a B2C direct-to-consumer strategy, right? And then obviously you have multi-channel with Amazon and probably you're considering TikTok and many other channels. So how the B2B versus D2C strategy is coming into implementation on your day-to-day, you know, decision-making process? And when you analyze demand or customer requirements, do you analyze it from the B2B side of things, from the B2C direct to consumer side of things? How do you make those type of decision and how it's impacting, you know, your day-to-day decision making?
So I think it is very, very, in our case, our company was born as a B2B company. Yeah. So we are the products that professionals use in their business. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the B2B and the professionals will always be at the heart of our company. Now, the beauty of this is that just in terms of messaging, okay, for our consumers, for our professionals, the key message is our glue is the best. Okay. We have special formulas that do get the job done. They have been fine-tuned for over 65 years. We have worked with our professionals, so we have open relationship because of the size of the company. Professionals, when they have an issue with our product or with a specific problem that they have out there, they call our company and we give them feedback and we work with them, right? So we have a highly, highly trained professional team that can give feedback, not just about the use of our products, but in general. So we are, the power of our glue is something that we mentioned to our consumers and our professionals. Mm-hmm. For professionals, it's also important that we are manufacturing. And the reason is right now there is a lot of companies that are starting to basically just getting products from China, bringing them to US and doing a lot of marketing. Okay. And manufacturing is a critical component for us because we want to preserve the quality. We also want to make sure that the products are safe for families, that the formulas don't have anything toxic, etc.
Sure.
And finally is the personalized relationship. So those are our three uniques on the professional side. Mm-hmm. Now on our consumer side, the beauty of this is one of, you know, as I mentioned already, the glue is our key component. But then the second one is professionals use our products. That's the key message for our consumers, right? Mm-hmm. So that's already a bridge between the B2B and the consumer side is that our products, we are one of the few companies that gives the professional products or versions of the professional products and the professional formulas to the consumer. So what we are.
Yeah. I mean, it's vetted by professionals, right? So that's
exactly
a very strong statement, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we see a lot of companies that are using a lot of marketing that might not be like completely. It's a little bit of buzzword. So a lot of companies are using professional grade or heavy duty, etc. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the reality is that not anybody, like very few of them can say that actually these are the products that professionals use. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is already the blend of our channels. In terms of B2B, the priority is always is in my estimation, the B2B opportunity serving our professionals, our distributors is the biggest opportunity of all. But also it's the most complex because it requires a lot of us understanding the processes, understanding what they are looking for, understanding like the details. Because in this particular case, you really need to deliver a lot of information to professionals. They are looking for, you know, cost, how the return on investment of their products, how to use, and much more detail, right? So creating that content, that is already a process that we are starting to take it from good to great. It's going to be a big opportunity, but a big challenge. So we're working on that. on the consumer side, it was a simple, more simple, like faster opportunity to reach a lower hanging fruit, because it's, we have all this content that is ready for professionals. We just need to fine tune it, bring it to a level of the level of understanding that a consumer wants to have. And we can provide this. So the opportunity there was faster to achieve and more simple. And then how do we interact these channels? The way that we communicate is we bring you professional, the products that professionals use. We give you the information, but then there's a level of work that, you know, it's never, sometimes the job cannot be done just by you. And we need, you need a professional to complete the job, right? There's that, that this is why this is an actual profession. There's a lot of knowledge. So we try to bring our consumers always to say, hey, there's, this is the level where we can get you. This is the best you can do. These are all the tools. We don't stop until you complete the job. And there is a point where you need to accept, hey, you need the professionals to come home. So yeah, this is how we're trying to bridge both channels. Honestly, the company does a really good job on the managing channel conflict. In my role at, on marketing, I'm consistently communicating with the other sales teams, making sure that everybody's comfortable about the level of communication and promotional activity, pricing, etc. Mm-hmm. But it's, there's always tension there. Now, it has been, it's one of the lowest, it's a company that I've experienced so far that everybody's open on growing. Everybody's focused on growth, and mindset, therefore willingness to say, hey, it's okay because you are helping us grow as a whole.
Yes. So obviously you have the B2B domain and the B2B website and B2B marketing and operation. Then you have the direct to consumers. You also have Amazon. Probably these channels will grow and you will open more and more of these channels. And this creates complexities, right? Definitely in the operational side and obviously on the marketing side. What are the challenges that you see right now in managing and optimizing all these multi-channel activities?
I think, we have had definitely managing SKU proliferation and configurations. So my goal is to keep it as simple as possible.
Yeah.
There has been cases where we wanted to create, like companies want to create a lot of configurations just to manage channel conflict. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that even when I was in Hershey, a lot of companies are trying to create these configurations thinking that they are going to bypass the competitiveness in e-commerce channels. But the e-commerce channels are getting so sophisticated, okay, that it's you cannot bypass them only through configuration. And a lot of times you're bringing just extra complexity to your organization without having really truly solving the problem. So you're thinking, okay, if we make a 10 pack and a 12 pack, then they are not gonna decrease prices, compete. But the sophistication that these channels have is getting to that point, as they understand that this is what people are doing. You just get to the best pricing. So now you create a complexity, not understanding that the companies will keep getting more sophisticated on their pricing strategies and competition, and you didn't get the benefit. So I'm trying to keep it as simple as possible within our own organization, and then saying when the problem arises, we will solve it, and we have different channels to solve it, but we are not going to be proactive creating complexity just thinking that eventually could happen. I have examples. When I was in Hershey, there was like points where retailers were doing competition at the cases level, right? So we have bags with certain grams and weights, and we were like, okay, this weight here, and suddenly we're realizing, hey, these are comparing now grams and doing comping and price reduction based on grams. So now you have all this complexity and none of the benefit.
Yeah. So Elias, you mentioned Hershey's, and I think let's branch out here for a few minutes. I'm very interested in your personal story. I know you started your career in Mexico. So maybe let's spend some time for you to share, I mean, your journey. I think it's very, very interesting for the listeners.
So, you know, I'll keep it super short. I study engineering in Mexico, and when I started in the corporate world, I ended up in finance as my starting point. Now, classmates that I had in the same classroom were working for the same company than me, and some of them were working on sales, other ones were working on marketing, and we studied exactly the same. Okay, so it looked like it was a little bit of luck where we all landed. Personally, I've always been very math focused and oriented. But you know, as I was going through the finance world, I discovered that my desire has been always creating new business. I have had personal businesses since I was young. I actually quit my first job to start a pest control manufacturing company. We manufacture a rat bait that was poison and base, and you know, it was a pretty incredible opportunity, and you know, that got me into this particular job here, right? Eventually, I discovered that finance wasn't like what I like or enjoy. I could do it really well, but it wasn't exciting for me. So I started branching out into the marketing and the sales world. I found an opportunity discipline that I really loved that was called revenue growth management, where you could just think about things holistically. You put the point of marketing, market share, you put the point of sales, that is revenue, and then you put the point of finance, that is margin, and you make the right decision for the business, right? So I was seeing a lot of teams were just trying to maximize their own goals, and I was always thinking, why are we not thinking? I understand this is your goal, and I understand the company is telling you that you should be doing this. But once you think about this decision, you understand that this is not the best overall. And we need to find a way to, you know, say, hey, I'm going to even take a hit on my goal to get the best for the business. So when I discovered this discipline, I loved it. And I started making a career there. And I did it for a subsidiary of Coca-Cola in Mexico. I did it for Danone. I did it for Hershey. And then in Hershey, always I was like, again, trying to bring new business opportunities. But it wasn't very traditional to have a finance person doing or a revenue growth management person doing this type of job. So I got to do a partnership between Uber and Hershey. It was about bringing products, free product to consumers in different occasions, so Mother's Day, Valentine's Day, etc. But the reality is my goal was always to put this product, like get a, basically I was like, okay, we can put a vending machine in Ubers in the long run, and that this is just the inception of the idea, testing if there's consumer appetite. And that got me into the US, you know, the executives in the US saw what I did and find it attractive, and they brought me to the US. And then in the US, I was always looking for opportunities of, again, I was in finance, and I was like, hey, I want to create new business. I'm well equipped to create new business. A lot of people could do finance, you know, but not driving business, and that's where my skills thrive. So I was just looking for opportunities, and I found digital as a great way for driving new opportunities, new exciting ways of driving business. And from there, I was like, okay, digital and marketing, and the combination of digital marketing is where I want to focus on. These two things are merging and separating consistently. So, you know, you have a digital team that does the inception, then they start training the marketing teams, then you unify and you say the marketing teams need to be digital native, they need to understand this. And then eventually, you know, you start losing a little bit of the innovation of digital and you start branching them out and the cycle repeats. So my goal is to always transform organizations from the marketing and digital perspective, like marketing, doing a lot of marketing, but doing that digital transformation, using all the transformational tools, the digital world to drive growth, right? And that can give a huge advantage to smaller organizations, companies in the $500 million that want to compete with big organizations. They need to be extremely focused on digital because this is the great equalizer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, looking at your career path, this whole thing, moving from the back-end finance to the front-end, let's call it, marketing and business innovation and coming up with the business, is it something that you planned? Did you envision yourself on the digital side? Or it's like opportunities that you saw along the way and try to utilize them and do more than what you are paid for?
I've always wanted to do business road and companies. I have, you know, my purpose in life is to find new pathways to growth. Mm-hmm. And that's for personal growth. That's for my employees' growth and for companies' growth. So I'm thinking, what is nobody thinking about that we need to do, and we need to do it fast and better than everybody else? This will give us a competitive advantage and make us money, right? So because of my finance background, and even on a marketing perspective, I'm thinking bottom line, is this going to give us in the long run profitability? Yes or no? If no, you know, there is a way to create branding, but also making money. So that's part. But, you know, it was very challenging. It was very, very challenging. I'm very thankful that I'm where I am, because in big corporations, you get, you know, when people work in big, large organizations and you meet new employees and you meet a new employee that works in finance, you are a finance person. You meet that person, salesperson. So you start putting labels into people, okay? Yeah. And the problem that I have is like, I'm labelless, okay? I'm business growth no matter what. I want to grow a business. I want to drive, deliver results. And this is problematic because it starts ringing, you know, it starts creeping into some other job, and that can create conflict or friction. But for example, in Hershey, the last thing that I was trying to do, I was like, how do I show a company that is so large, that people are so busy in their jobs, that I'm not a finance guy, I'm a business owner? Mm-hmm. And I found out that there was a contest of how to crack a checkout in that time, right? It was like a contest of how to crack the business on checkout, how to figure it out to drive checkout growth. Mm-hmm. But they were just inviting marketing and salespeople. Okay, so so I was like, I need to get into this contest.
Okay.
I need to win it, okay, to show them that I'm not a finance guy. Okay, I need to do this. So, you know, my boss was very, very traditional at that point. Like, you know, he was like, you're a finance guy, you cannot do anything else. You know, by the way, he did amazing for me because he is the one that brought me to the US, but he was putting me on this bucket. So I had to, you know, this was my boss's boss, and I needed to negotiate with my boss and say, hey, please let me go to this contest. Okay. I need you to cover for me, because if the boss's boss find out, he's not going to let me go. He's not going to let me participate. So I need you to cover for me so I can go, come back in the breaks, you know, to make sure that people think, you know, they don't because they are not going to understand what I'm trying to achieve. This is completely atypical. Let me go, come back on the breaks, make sure that the work is happening. Just give me a chance to win this contest, and then, showcase what I have. And, you know, I obviously there's a lot of luck involved. I feel very grateful and fortunate where I am. But, you know, I won the contest. I had a team. I was working with sales marketing team, and I was obsessed. I was like, I need to win this thing. It's my only way to get out of here, or I'm going to have to find another company, another job. And that got me into that was an extra credential that I can come and showcase. So when I was introducing myself to different executives in other teams, and I was saying, hey, I'm a growth person, I'm a business development, etc., I could say, hey, here's an example. Right, I competed with all the marketing people, all the salespeople in the organization, and I was able to have the winning idea. Right, so that was part of the things that I've had to do to get to be able to pivot to the point that I'm being taken seriously on the marketing and digital channels or discipline. Right, it wasn't an easy thing, but I love it. You know, I love my job. I love what we're doing. Yeah. And I love the growth.
That's an amazing story. So what is your What are your conclusions from that story? Or what some of the lessons that you can share with our audience for someone, you know, who is growing in the industry and looking for tips?
For me, is do not let the people, like the label that people give you, be what defines you. And, you know, it has been on my career, I've been labeled many things. Mm-hmm. And I just work with myself to say, hey, this is not why, you know what you are. You know the value that you have for business, for driving growth. And you need to stick with it, and you cannot let anybody dictate who you are. So I think that has been a key thing, and always move forward. So for me, is I'm always taking a step forward, no matter what. And I think these two things, and to be honest, as I was saying, you know, I'm grateful also because I think that there's a lot of people that have the same level of skill sets, the same level of drive, and they are in roles that are not at the level or with the level of responsibility that I have right now. So I always try to approach it with that, you know, being grateful. Also because ego, you know, when you continue your career, you can just get too full of yourself and say, hey, I'm here just because what I've done, etc. Mm-hmm. But that takes a little bit of, you know, that changes your behavior, and I don't think it's a positive way to explore things. So that will be my recommendation.
Nice. And I know you're also big in video games. So how this fits into the whole Elias picture?
So, you know, I'm a nerd, and I think that is also something that it's a difference, a differential. You know, I've seen we all experience like the marketing and the digital channels based on our personality, and you know, there's many executives that are a little bit, you know, different. They have a different background. They are. You know, they might have been coming from sports, etc. But in my case, I'm a nerd. I grew up with technology. I grew up playing video games, especially strategy video games. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was always obsessed with strategy, maximizing resources, optimizing resources. So I think that I grew up in an era that, you know, video games were still very, very challenging and require a lot of thinking, different to what we have right now, that is, you know, basically they are designed to keep you just progressing. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be thinking enough. Once you think enough and you get stuck, it tells you where to go, etc. But I think that that component has made me love my job, because I'm looking at things and I'm look in my mind, I'm playing a video game. Like, yeah. It's, I'm looking metrics, I'm optimizing resources. And, you know, I'm basically taking everything that I love from when I was growing up into the world. And of course, bringing the people's component right into this, that for me is like, I've, realized that like at the end, we will all, you know, retire, and some of the things will, like a lot of the things we do will not be remembered. So part of my goal is to help the individuals that are around me, employees, help them as much as I can, in terms of quality of life, salary, etc. But in terms of improving of metrics, it translates. Like if you are a nerd and you play a lot of StarCraft, I think it, in the digital world and e-commerce, it's a beautiful transition.
Okay, so that's a secret sauce that maybe people need to be aware of more. Probably it helps also with UI UX, right? Customer journeys, learning what's working and what's not. So
really, I would suggest, I would recommend, if you are in the digital world, play a lot of StarCraft.
Yes, okay, that's a good title for the episode. Yeah. Elias, I want to go back to Catchmaster and talk to you about retention versus acquisition, right? I would love to hear what are your thoughts on retention and consumer engagement around retention. How much effort do you put on retention, or is it more on acquisition side? What are your thoughts on this?
So retention is imperative for me. And I tell you, whenever I see a bad review, whenever I see a bad comment, I get so frustrated. And I say, I put myself on their shoes. So because right now at the level of size of the company, I'm looking at every single comment and every single review consumers are giving. Okay. So because I don't have all this big data, I'm like, I need to understand it perfectly. And a lot of the complaints, by the way, most of the things are positive, right? We have, the top product in the pest control category. Mm-hmm. I think it's over 70,000 reviews, like something wow. crazy, wow. and, you know, mostly positive. But whenever I get something negative and I read it and I'm like, the consumer is right, I get really, really, really frustrated because I'm like, we need to get it right for this specific person, okay? I'm not thinking about like the numbers of 2% of our consumers are complaining, etc. No, no. This person, we need to make it right. Right, the customer mm-hmm. service, you need to send a product to this person. They are completely right. And we need to have this consumer for the rest of their life. It's in our particular case, you know, the lifetime value of a consumer is huge. A consumer that loves, like uses our product and is satisfied with it, will use it for the rest of their life, right? They will remember our brand. They will go for the product that works. So it's so critical for us to consumer retention. And this has been, I've always been consumer focused, but in the size of organization that I have, it's like I feel like one-to-one relationship. So that is the priority that I have. Now, in terms of acquisition, we're doing a lot of different strategies. You know, we are launching, especially right now, we are going to launch our social media channels. They are going to be very fun. That is going to be a critical component here. They are going to be very interesting. You know, I'll be sharing with you in the future our Instagram and our Facebook. But it's going to be the right mix of keeping consumers loving our products and loving to follow our account to see fun stuff, and also sparking, putting a little bit of knowledge, right? So how do you keep people engaged so they can learn about the usage of our products, etc.? So that is a key component that we're working on. And, you know, we have we spend a lot of money on digital advertising and that for consumer acquisition. But to be honest, lifetime value for consumers and having happy customers and consumers is like the priority for our company. As I told you, for the professional side, one of our key uniques is one-to-one relationship. Yes. And then on our consumer side, you know, we have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of consumers. I want to keep that same unique of having a one-to-one relationship with them.
Yes, yes, nice. I like the one-to-one relationship approach. This is like beyond segmentation, beyond data. This is like one-to-one real life, understanding customer behavior and try to respond on an individual level, right? Obviously, this is something that you can do on your size, and I guess there will be probably other ideas how to do that when you grow, right? Because it's not going to be manually feasible to do that.
No, it is not. But I think, yeah. I would suggest, like, even when you're a really large company, you know, like what starts happening is you start aggregating consumers and you start developing these personas that might not be perfect, and mm-hmm. you start, like, basically you start separating from your consumer. And you see a lot of brands right now that are doing a lot of marketing that is like separated for their consumers. And now they're struggling, right? Brands are having massive PR issues because they separated so much from the consumer. An executive arrived, aggregated all the information, said, I found the solution. They go ahead and they blow up the brand, yeah. Okay? So you need to find a way. You need to find a way. It doesn't matter if you have hundreds of thousands or millions of consumers, you need to find a way to always bring back, at least look at the worst of the worst, right? The worst of the worst, the people that are complaining the worst, and reading it at the one level. I want mm-hmm. to see this every day. I want to read 5 of the worst reviews, right? Wow.
Yeah.
To understand, that is something that I think when you are in a large company, that should be your priority in terms of how do you keep that one personalized relationship so you are really in touch with the consumer and not just an aggregate that you created on your own mind and with data, and you have a persona, and then you risk, you know, getting out of touch with your consumers. And I think that is a big issue with large brands. It's like, I agree with you, Ethan, that it will be a challenge once we start being like, you know, it gets out of control. That will be a challenge. And, you know, aggregating information is easy. Finding, you know, creating your own consumer personas, I think it's easy. Everybody's doing it. You know, you talk to any agency, any strategic marketing agency, and they will go and present personas and all of these and that. I think a lot of brands are getting out of touch. That is the hard part at this point where we have so much data.
Yes, yes, yes. So Elias, this is the part of the episode where, you know, I ask guests to share a fun fact. So I'd love to hear something about you that most of your professional network are not aware of.
So I love reading and I make challenges for myself. So part of, you know, I told you about going and winning the contest to try to show. The other thing I did is I read one book per week about digital and e-commerce and summarize it. And I went and I was presenting every week a summary to my potential bosses of a book to showcase the appetite that I had to grow. So, you know, that has been the year that I've read more books, 52 books that year. And it's just, you know, trying to do something different that nobody else is doing. I guess that's an interesting fact.
Amazing, Elias. That's a different level of commitment. So really amazing.
I needed to do something. Or get stuck.
Yes. Elias, anything else you want to add?
No, I really appreciate the conversation. I would say, and I also appreciate the plug on Catchmaster. It's an amazing company, family owned, and the products are incredible. And honestly, I've never been so, you know, so excited about working with a brand and people in the organization. So I'm just super excited about this experience, and I appreciate that I was able to share a little bit about our products and our company.
Great, great. It's great to see also you are smiling most of the interview. So it really shows a lot. Elias, how people can find you?
So my LinkedIn is Elias Castaneda. I think that's the best way to connect with me and just keep in touch. You know, I'm trying to grow the network with marketing and digital professionals, and you know, I try to have one-on-one conversations with different people, learn from everybody. So just add me to LinkedIn.
Amazing, and we will add your LinkedIn to the show notes. I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much, Elias.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.